Good morning.
In Dublin's fair city, where the girls are so pretty, I far set my eyes on sweet Molly Malone. As she wheeled her wheelbarrow through the streets broad and narrow, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh.
Ah, Dublin, my Dublin. It's anthem sung there by the late Frank Hart, as heard on the Rolling Wave. More on that later. But it's official. The capital's riddled. As of yesterday, at level 3, with a ban on indoor dining. And was it ever really in any doubt? Because the writing seems to be on the wall since Wednesday, when Professor Philip Nolan, chair of NEFID's modelling group, brought us this.
I am more concerned at this point in time than I have been at any point in time since late April. I'm concerned about the rise in cases, the pattern of the disease, the reproduction number, and what our scenario models tell us about what will happen in the next couple of weeks if each and every one of us doesn't change the manner in which we're managing our contacts and the risk of disease.
And by Thursday at 5 o'clock.
Breaking news. RTE understands now that NEFID has advised Dublin goes to level 3 risk rating. We'll be talking to the government.
No big surprise, but what was a big surprise was that restaurants without outdoor seating might also be asked to close their doors. On Thursday evening, Katie Hannon spoke to Adrian Cummins of the Restaurant Association.
Did this come out of the blue for you this evening?
Absolute shock across our industry with regard to this recommendation from NEFID to close all indoor dining for restaurants and pubs that serve food in capital. It's not in restaurants where the cases are spreading, it's in households. We're saying very clearly to the cabinet that we need to make a decision here about the livelihoods of businesses, people that work in our industry, the thousands of workers, the thousands of businesses that will be affected by this right across the capital if they bring in this decision. And we are in extreme shock and annoyance right across our industry at the way that this has been announced without any prior consultation for our sector, a sector that has done everything right, controlled environments, we are regulated, and the cases are at a very, very minimum right across the country in restaurants. Over the last number of days, the medical profession have said that it is rising cases in households, have never mentioned restaurants until today.
Late debate on Thursday night, and we'll get to Adrian Cummins' assertion around numbers and transmission in a bit. But for now, think that it's 10 o'clock on Thursday night, and if you have a restaurant, you're learning that you might be closed by midnight on Friday. And that, in many ways, was the story of the week. Government communication, or lack thereof. Let's go back to Tuesday and the publication of that much-anticipated Living with COVID plan. 25 counties on level 2. But Dublin? Nah. Sure, we wouldn't get out of bed for less than 2.5. On the News at 1, Richard Downes put this to Health Minister Stephen Donnelly.
We have a very clear level, which is level 2 for everybody.
But this is 2 and a bit, isn't it?
No, it's not. And I've heard the opposition on this. And really, I have to say it is very disappointing because we are hearing the opposition continually undermine the advice from the public health doctors. It's not helpful to the people of Dublin. It's not helpful to any of your listeners. The situation for Dublin, as I said, is we're at level 2. What the public health doctors are saying as part of that is just have visitors from one other household over to your house.
At any time.
And also when the wet pubs are opened next week for Dublin, just for the time being, we need to keep them closed because we need to do everything we can to stop Dublin moving to level 3. So that's exactly what's going on.
So 2, but with additions. Now, to be fair to Stephen Donnelly, as we would learn later in the day, he wasn't feeling too hot. But it was all very confusing. But one group for whom this new roadmap was certainly not confusing were Dublin publicans. Traditional pubs in Dublin were still unable to open. And to say that they were frustrated was an understatement. Donal O'Keefe, Chief Executive of the Licensed Vintners Association, spoke on the News at One.
Donal, you must be very disappointed.
We're running out of words to describe how devastated and disappointing this whole situation is for our members. Just this day last week, we were doing media interviews from outside Leinster House, welcoming a cabinet decision that all pubs in Ireland would reopen on the 21st of September. There was no talk about individual counties being singled out at that stage. Critically as well, we welcomed the fact that the government said just 7 days ago that wet pubs would not be singled out again, that hospitality sector would be treated equally. 7 days later, both of those commitments have been broken in the context of the Dublin pub trade. This is now the fourth reopening date that has been bypassed for our members, going from July through to today.
And that frustration was also echoed on Liveline, with many calling into question the communication around this issue. And also later, the issue of travel, both inside Dublin and outside. Not strictly forbidden, or was it, or merely encouraged to stay. More confusion. Justice Minister Helen McEntee joined Philip Boucher-Hayes on Drive Time.
Minister, when you introduced restrictions in Kildare, Laois and Offaly, in the very places that they were targeting that were supposed to be understood, it was very clear that the workers in many of these meat plant factories didn't understand what it was that they were being asked to do. And now you've introduced level ones and level twos and threes with enhanced or added extra restrictions for people. Are you not confusing the message at a time that you should be making it as simple as possible?
Well, I have to point out that the situation that we find ourselves in with Kildare and obviously at the time Laois and Offaly is very different to the situation we find ourselves in now. You have to take into account as well the type of cases that were there at the time, the type of clusters, how it was actually permeating through not just those particular businesses or sectors that you've outlined, but also the community. I mean, I do need to point out, and I suppose I can point to this in my own department in justice, particularly with direct provision, there was a huge community and communications outreach at all stages to make sure that we are providing as much information as possible. And in the same way that we did that for Kildare, for people in Kildare and the other two counties, we will be providing this information, be it over our airways, be it in our report, our newspapers, be it online. But all of this will be very clear, very visible.
But so you're not accepting then that you made an absolute hames of the communications on a far simpler message, and now you have a more complicated message to communicate. Are you not learning lessons here?
Well, I think the outcome in Kildare was that numbers reduced, and unfortunately, while the measures, nobody wanted to have to introduce those measures, they worked, and we were able to get the numbers under control, and Kildare have come out of that situation and are in a much better place. What we want to do with the new roadmap is ensure that we are all moving at the same pace. However, based on the advice from NPHET last week, we couldn't ignore that. We can't ignore the fact that Dublin is in a different place. Numbers are increasing. We want to bring that under control. And my hope is that come the 3rd of October, we all move on to the next phase together.
All right. Well, time will tell if the message is understood.
Philip with a bit of the waggy finger. But then, 14 minutes past five, this happened.
I'm just getting a flash here now, Minister, as we speak, that the cabinet is now to self-isolate and that the Dáil has been abandoned for a week. We just heard that the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, has been tested for COVID. What's your information?
I'm afraid that's the first that I'm hearing of this. My last information to date was that Minister Donnelly had been informed he was to take a test and that I, as a colleague of his, had no further actions to take. So I'm afraid this is news to me.
Okay, well, I'm sorry to be the person to have broken it to you so abruptly. My bedside manner needs a little bit of working on, obviously.
Sweet mother of the divine. And within the hour, Barry Lenehan, positively salivating, was back in the studio with this.
Here's what the Ceann Comhairle told the Dáil.
A very serious information. I'm told that arising out of events today, the Cabinet must now self-isolate. Therefore, the possibility of proceeding with business does not arise, and the House stands adjourned, I suspect, until Tuesday next, or until I'm directed by the Taoiseach to reconvene the House. So Dáil adjourned until further notice. Thank you.
But within a few short minutes...
I can in fact update your update there, Parry, because we now understand...
that the Dáil will now return this evening, the shortest interregnum perhaps that the Dáil has ever seen. 17:14, the House was suspended, but the move has been confirmed to Micheál Martin, to the Labour leader, Alan Kelly, in the last minute, that the Dáil will return this evening and junior ministers will instead take questions from the opposition rather than the Cabinet ministers. So the Cabinet restricting their movements, the Dáil back in business after 45 minutes of an interregnum.
And thankfully, Minister Donnelly tested negative for COVID-19. But later that night, Katie Hannan and co returned, and her opening line spoke for political anoraks everywhere.
Well, I think you'll all agree that we picked quite the day to return to the airwaves with Late Debate.
Oh, that you did. And one of Katie's guests was columnist Alison O'Connor.
One of those days, Katie, when you're afraid to look at the notifications on your phone, and even the fact that there's still almost 2 hours left in the day, we can't rule out any further developments. Definitely one for the annals of history, and certainly not a good one for the government. But I guess it sounds cliche to say it, but just when you think Micheál Martin must be thinking things can't get any worse, or got up this morning thinking, you know, today will be a good day, we'll get our plan out there, and then it's basically a complete mess, I suppose, really. And yet you say that, and yet when you look at it, there were certain, a whole host of events that were outside of the government's control, not least the notion Stephen Donnelly did the correct thing. And the government, there was probably confusion as to, with all of us, as to what exactly they should do, what should happen with the Dáil. That was then changed, that they would come back. But I guess to a public already very sour about COVID and the restrictions and the extra restrictions today, none of that will be looked upon benignly. And watching the launch today of the plan and the different levels of that, I suppose you felt there could have been maybe a bell or a whistle. I mean, I never found myself wishing for a PowerPoint presentation before. It hasn't been a great day.
PowerPoint presentations, surely it would never come to that. That was a weary Alison O'Connor with Katie Hannan on Late Debate on Tuesday. But the award for the most deadpan intro of the week goes to Gavin Jennings on Wednesday's Morning Ireland.
A 5-point plan with extra points for Dublin on how to live with the virus for the next 6 months. Confusion, open contradictions, another big rise in virus cases in Dublin, a COVID test for the health minister, the Dáil suspended, the cabinet and senior public health officials isolating. A busy day and a lot to take in.
Oh, master of understatement there, but rest assured, by Wednesday afternoon, it was business as usual in the Dáil. And by that, I mean fighting. The News at One brought us this.
Well, I have to tell you, all you have achieved is to cause confusion, and you haven't been on your own, because other ministers in government
Overtime,
have caused confusion too. So clarify matters now. Precisely and succinctly set out the travel advice for people in Dublin. You're the Taoiseach. You are the Taoiseach. Set it out. Your ministers don't know it. The community doesn't know it. You're the head of government. So instead of snapping at me, actually do your job and set the information out.
And in relation to Dublin, you know full well the advice. I said it here yesterday in the Dáil. And you know full well what the advice is, and I'll say it again. Those living in Dublin should be encouraged to limit travel outside of Dublin, if possible. And when outside the county, they should not meet with more than one other household. That's the advice from NPHET. That's the advice we've endorsed, and that's the advice that's out there right now. There's not a regulation, there's not a legal restriction. That is the advice. Encourage people not to travel outside of Dublin. Of course, you knew that, but you just wanted to come in and say confusion, chaos, this, that.
Thank you. Just want to keep, time is up.
You keep on doing that. That's the mantra, and that's what opposition do.
Time is up.
Sinn Féin's Mary Lou MacDonald with Taoiseach Micheál Martin. But one small ray of light for the beleaguered leader. On Thursday, party colleague Jim O'Callaghan came into Clareburn and he said he was absolutely not gunning for Micheál Martin's job. Well, not yet anyway. But as to how the last few days had been for government, well, Clare asked this.
Was the communication good around the plan? Well, I thought the plan itself was very good, and a lot of people who talk about the plan haven't read it. It's a 60-page, very detailed document. But when you're trying to respond to a pandemic and you're trying to respond by caring for the country economically, socially and by way of health, you can't have some very simple three-word statement. It has to be detailed. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there was, there may have been some confusion initially, but the plan is a very good plan that's detailed.
And that's not what I asked you. I asked you, it was the communication around the plan good? Was it handled well?
Well, I think the plan itself is very good. There was obviously
That's not what I'm asking you. The plan is grand. Yeah. It's got five clear levels. The problem is that the situation we had in Dublin on Tuesday and indeed today doesn't fit into the plan.
Yeah, there was an issue in respect of Dublin. But like, I think we've got to be careful that we don't look at this process as being exclusively about trying to catch out politicians. Like, there is a plan there and we're at level two, but there's a deviation in respect of Dublin.
Yeah, it's kind of what you didn't say. That was Fianna Fáil's Jim O'Callaghan with Clare on Thursday. However, as Level 3 looked more and more likely for Dublin, there were some dissenting voices at the wisdom of a return to restrictions. Here's economist Dan O'Brien on the same programme.
OK, the figures just out now show that 3 people went into hospital with COVID over the past 24 hours. 3. OK, now that's serious, but it's 3 people. Back in March and April, 50 people were presenting at the peak every day going in, okay? 3 people. Now, let's put it in perspective, the cost of this and a voice that we don't hear enough of, it's younger people, okay? People between 15 and 24 who are coming of age in this period. 1 person in that category has died. Now, there are hundreds of thousands of people in that age cohort. 1 has died. We are asking those kids to not get their education, to not enjoy their independence, starting their adult lives, doing all the wonderful things that happen in those absolutely crucial years. We're asking them to completely upend their lives with massive economic cost. You know, 1 in 5 people, young people in their early 20s, have lost their job in the past 6 months. Now, we have to factor in the costs for those people as well. And we have to say, look, this is a very serious disease for older people, and older people have a responsibility, I would say, to younger people to take more precautions because they are the people who are vulnerable. Let's remember the cost of this as well and the cost to younger people. This disease.
So you're telling the older people to stay at home.
I'm saying that in my view, the government should highlight more the different risk factors that there are, that older people and people with underlying conditions. This disease discriminates. It is a highly discriminatory disease. That's the fact, okay? We know that absolutely clearly about this disease. And we need to say that very clearly, that older people, this is a really serious risk to the lives of older people. And people, that older people have to factor that in. The cost for younger people, the risk for younger people is minuscule, and okay, their lives are being destroyed.
Okay.
Economist Dan O'Brien with Clare on Thursday. But the numbers in Dublin and in other counties, let it be said, were not good. And on Friday's Morning Ireland, Paul Reid, CEO of the HSE, explained why closing pubs and restaurants was indeed the right thing to do.
I think that's a kind of point that we have to help the public just to understand even more, because there's a tendency to marginalise the issue into certain settings, whether it's meat plants, nursing homes, schools, or restaurants. But actually what's happening, as I just said at the start, 40% of the cases emerge from the community. So in essence, it's brought from the community back into the home and highly transmits from the community back into the home. So it is where people gather. It is where people congregate in public settings as well.
And later on the News at One, science correspondent George Lee channeled Professor Philip Nolan to further explain the numbers and the logic of these restrictions.
What he's saying is, look, this whole issue of talking about closing restaurants and pubs, why do we have to do it when there are so few outbreaks in those areas? He said the people are making those arguments, he says, on behalf of NPHET, basically, they're misreading and misinterpreting the data about outbreaks. What he says is that when you effectively, if you're out in a restaurant and you are with a group and you pick up the virus grows within you invisibly for 3 days. For the next 2 days, you begin to shed the virus and you develop symptoms and you go for a test. Now, the testing thing is so... I remember what they're trying to do. They're trying to stop the spread of the virus. So they're trying to get ahead of it. Who have you met in the last 48 hours? Where is it going to break out next? They're concentrating on that. They're not going back 5 days. They're not going back and saying, were you in a restaurant or were you in a pub or somewhere or a hotel 5 days ago? And so when you look at the data, in that case, that individual, he said, will turn out to be a community-acquired infection. And his household who picked it up are now a household infection. So you see all the numbers which are saying, oh, you have a huge increase in, and most of the cases and clusters are in households. They don't say where did the household actually originally get it, because nobody really knows. And what he's saying is all of the evidence suggests that it's coming from wherever people are socially interacting up to 5 days beforehand. That's why he says that it's so important to close down those social interactions. What they said is that it's linear. If you reduce your social interactions by half, you will reduce the reproduction of this virus by half, no matter where they are.
George Lee with Áine Lawler on yesterday's News at One. So, what you doing for the weekend? Not a lot. Back in a bit. Oh, and...
wash your hands.
Welcome back. We heard the singing of Frank Hart at the start of this programme, and his was a voice threaded through many programmes this week, starting with The Rolling Wave. Aoife Ní Cormac spoke to Terry Moylan about his book, A Living Voice, The Frank Hart Song Collection.
Frank was appalled at the idea of songs dying in books. I often heard him kind of speak critically about people who just collect songs as you might collect stamps to put them in books and look at them. He always wanted his songs to be taken up and passed on. He couldn't bear to think that a song would die because nobody was singing it. And every song in his universe, every song had a kind of a potential that has only needed the right singer to discover.
And one such singer is Mac Dara Yates. He joined Sean Rocks on Arena, where they talked about the songs and stories of Dublin's infamous red light district, Monto.
Frank Hart, the great song collector and singer of Dublin songs and many songs, had the adage, those in power write the history and those who suffer write the songs. And essentially, if you look at the Irish song tradition, or indeed the folk traditions of any country, what you won't find is a very accurate representation of history. But honestly, if you look a bit closer, you might get an idea of how these things felt and what it was like to live through those times on an emotional level.
Yeah, because the idea that you're touching on here is that if you want to find out what happened, or at least a version of what happened, mm-hmm. read a history book. But if you want to really get a sense of the feeling of it, sing a song or look for a song.
Let's listen to another song here. And again, very dark song. We were talking about this before we came down to studio tonight, hearing this song as a child. And you get very frightened even just by the first verse.
I know a woman, she lives in the woods. Weela, weela, weela. I know a woman, she is no good. Down by the river side. She had a baby 3 months old. Weela, weela, weela. She had a baby with no clothes. Down by the river side. She put the baby in a pond. Weela, weela, weela. She put it in with no clothes on. Down by the river side.
Ooh, what an eerie piece of music. Folklorist Terry Fagan was also on Arena, and he talked about the brutal reality of the lives of women working in Monto.
Those women, when they became pregnant in the brothels of Monto, they were no longer useful to the madams. He tossed them out. Mm. And when they were taken up into the rooms to have their baby, Mrs. Dunleavy was known as the midwife of Monto. She would deliver the baby. And once the baby was born, the woman would say to the person that took her in, would you mind me, child, will I go off and get somewhere to bring the baby? And they never come back for them. No. And they were aired by the locals, and they're known in the area as the Monto Babies.
Arena on Tuesday night. And the power of song was the starting point for this week's lyric feature, when Ye Vagabond singer Breen McGlynn looked back to both Ewan McCall and, yes, Frank Hart with his radio ballad. It told the story from December 1940, when 8 Donegal fishermen rescued 18 Dutch sailors from a cargo ship which had been wrecked on rocks in a hurricane force storm.
I was asked to go to the shop for my mother, and I went down, ran down the steps and turned around the corner running, and Fulburn, who was probably only my age now, mid-50s, smoking a cigarette just at the gable, looking out, says, "That's a bad day, Phil, isn't it?" Now, this particular day was horrible. Like, there was no boats, there was northerly gales, there was big seas running. And he looked at me. I'll never forget the look he gave me. He says, "That's not a bad day, lad." And I didn't know how to react, but I knew not to answer him. And something went, whoa, what does he mean by that? So I went and done what I had to do. My mother came back up and asked my father, who stayed up. I says, "Dad," I says, "what do you think about it?" And he says, he says, "Phil's probably on the Stalwick." And I says, "What's that?"
Well, the Stalwick was a great steamship out of the Netherlands. 280 feet from stern to bow, 2,500 tons. In a cargo transportation bound from America, her convoy sailed along the coast near Inishbofin Bay. From German submarines and wild Atlantic storms, escorted by six Navy boats, they made their passage north. But on the 5th day of December, struck by a hurricane, her rudder broke, she went adrift and snapped her anchor chain.
The Ballad of the Stalwick Rescue, this week's lyric feature. A very beautiful and poignant listen. Adaptation by Stephen Jones was the drama on One, and it brought us a writer with a commission, a COVID-y commission, and he was in search of an idea, ideally an original one.
I have a monologue from a frontline nurse.
It's been done. I saw a brilliant one the other week.
Oh yeah, and was it sad?
Yeah. Poignant.
Poignant, right. Well, maybe a fun one then.
Not a lot to laugh about really though when you're out on the front lines.
Yeah,
like,
but what if it's TikTok? A frontline worker making a funny TikTok.
Nah. I think leave the TikToks to...
To the ticks? Is that what you're going to say? I'm going to tell your sister that you think she's a bleeding sick.
Right, next.
I have a couple who are trying to conceive during lockdown.
Chance to be a fine thing.
All right, smart arse. Yeah, that's all I have so far.
Start right before life begins on the planet.
A single mother.
All is...
She's lost her job.
Life.
And she's out on Henry Street protesting.
And then, like, life begins. With organisms.
A homeless man alone in a hotel room.
Those little single-cell ones. Oh, and it's before sex. From there, we go to bigger things.
A woman living in direct provision.
And then we see, you know, like,
A man finding out that he has COVID.
Dinosaurs. And then they're around for a long, long time.
A woman waiting to get her test.
And then an asteroid comes.
A funeral during all this.
The insects, the extinct mammals, the primates, the old-fashioned monkeys giving way to the new monkeys, whatever, and then apes.
Any joy?
I just feel like there's so many people with stories and they're all so big and tough and devastating and profound. I just don't know if I'm the person to try and tell their stories, you know? The big stories, the life-changing ones.
I hear you, babe. I hear you.
Adaptation, the drama on One. Oh, for the smell of grease paint again. Go on, the drama. 7-time All-Ireland winner and activist Philly McMahon came in and talked to Ray Darcy about mental health issues, childhood trauma and drug addiction.
The addicts we see mostly on the streets are the ones that are definitely ones that are struggling with their psychological pain and using drugs to overcome it.
Yes.
So it is a mental health issue. We have a huge amount of people taking cocaine in this country, a huge amount of people taking smoking hash and smoking weed. Why are they not all addicts? Now, some of them don't know they're addicts or don't want to believe they're addicts, but there's a huge amount of them that take drugs, but they're not addicts. And what it stems down to is that they mightn't have that psychological trauma.
Right.
That overshadows the pain that they have psychologically.
And for Philly McMahon, the economic circumstances in which you were born can determine your ability to deal with those issues.
Because if you're born in a working class community, you are essentially starting off on an unlevel playing field because you've got all these issues passed down to you. Also, then you don't have the resources or the financial resources to actually go into maybe recovery as someone that would have from a middle class to upper class. So you're starting off on an unlevel playing field. So we need to bridge the social inequality gap. And how we do that is we give young people in working class communities better opportunities. So if there's a choice for them to go and walk across the road and make €500 carrying a bag of drugs compared to walking to school or walking to work and going through that that barrier of you know, adversity or resilience, you know, to stay in the straight and narrow. That's what we need to do. Yeah. And on the other end is we need to decriminalise drugs. Mm. We need to stop treating these people as criminals and treat them as people that are struggling with mental health.
Do you think when people hear that decriminalise drugs, they go, oh no, you can't do that, you can't do that. And there is a difference between decriminalising and making them legal, isn't there?
Yes, I think that's what people mix up the most. Decriminalisation means if you see someone with personal use of drugs in the streets, the guard pulls them over and says, if you've got a problematic issue, do you want to go in and get help? And maybe they'll sit in front of, in Portugal, they'll sit in front of a dissuasion committee, which is just a normal building.
So a dissuasion committee. So they it's exactly what it says on the tin. You sit in front of three people and maybe a psychologist and a medical doctor, and they try and dissuade you from taking drugs.
Exactly. Because ultimately that's...
It sounds quaint in a way, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, like if you look at the recent policy we've put in place, which is just is crazy to think, you've got a three-strike policy now. So if you're caught with drugs, you get a slap on the wrist. Second time slap on the wrist, third time you're going to be... you're going to be incriminated, you're going to get a charge. When has ever a drug addict stopped taking drugs, first of all from a guard stopping them, and second of all after three attempts? It doesn't work, like, it's never worked.
Philly McMahon with Ray Darcy. Back in a bit. Welcome back. Over in Liveline on Monday, Anne phoned in about the Daily Millions draw, which was missing in action for a bit, and Joe took the opportunity to get nosy about her winnings and her numbers.
And how much do you spend a week in the bookies?
About fiver.
Yeah, and you say it's only 20 cent.
Yeah.
And do you go in, do you make one trip to the bookies a week? Or one of your gang does. Many of you in that syndicate?
I had to be a couple of us now, so there would.
Ah, many, Anne. A couple is a many. I'm not asking many acres you have on your farm.
There'd be about four or five of us.
Five of us, okay.
Yeah. But what we do is, when we win the money, we put it all in the tin. And at the come Christmas
What's that?
Day...
You're running away money?
Oh, yeah. So at Christmas then, you see, we turn on, we open the tin and we divide it out.
Right.
You know, so we could have a couple of thousand.
Oh, mammy. Would you keep an eye on that tin?
Oh, we do keep an eye on the tin, yeah. What? But I think it's my lucky numbers.
What are your lucky numbers?
Oh, I can't tell you that, Joe.
Because then everyone will be using them. What's it, your birthday and your the day
not.
You got married and...
No, you're going to laugh now. They're the month my dad died, the month my mum died, the date my mum died, and the date I buried my mum.
And how are they lucky numbers?
Oh, they're very lucky numbers because I minded my mum, and my mum said she would always look after me.
Okay, and it's your way of remembering them.
It's my way of remembering my mum. Yes,
very well done. Yes. Well done.
Ooh, did not see that coming, but kind of sweet. And then Joe, always a man to find the chink of the dark in the lightest of stories, brought this little nugget of information to Anne's attention.
Did you know, Anne, that if you buy a lottery ticket in the morning for the draw that night, this is statistics. If you buy a lottery ticket for a draw that night, you have a better chance of dropping dead than you have of winning the jackpot. Did you know that?
I did know that.
Yeah. In other words, more people die every year than win the jackpot.
People win the,
Okay, but that's, people love it anyway and they love to.
Yes. My dad, the Lord of Mercy, and him used to always say, you put your shoes on in the morning and you don't know who's going to take them off at night.
If you're lucky enough.
Yeah. And hopefully I'll be taking off me on you.
Oh my, that was Anne, not to be deterred from having the crack with Joe on Monday's Liveline. Now, a total gear change and a much more serious one. Age, Sex, Location was the Doc On one this week, and its focus was online child sex abuse. And while not always an easy listen, it was a necessary one and very compelling. Narrator Sinead Kennedy talked to a man whose job it is to police the images most of us will hopefully never see. He goes by the pseudonym Henry, and he is a content analyst here at the Internet Watch Foundation.
We see all sorts of stuff, just the worst things you could possibly... Well, I was going to say you could imagine. Before I worked here, I couldn't even have imagined what is actually out there, you know? I don't think a normal person could imagine it. Like, it's just, it's worse than you would ever, like, even dream of, I think.
And Henry talked about getting the job, a job few people might be able to do day in, day out.
As I was going through the interview phase, I had the thought in my mind, actually, would I be able to do this? I don't know, because I'd never seen child sexual abuse material before. And then you get to the point where they say, OK, we're going to show you some child abuse material now, basically to see how you react and if you can handle it. And up to that very point, before you press the button, I really was like, this could go, like, I could look at it and go, OK, I could think I can deal with this, or I could nearly run out of the room. I really don't know how I'm going to react. When it did appear, it was really shocking. The first time you see it, really, really shocking. They say to you, OK, you've seen some images, go away for the weekend, think about, is this what you want to do? And if you can handle it, doing it every day. And I just, by the time I got to the end of that day, I just kind of felt like I was back to myself again already. And I just thought, actually, I do think I'll be able to do this every day. They don't just, when you get hired, sit you down in front of a computer and say, like, off you go. You gradually build a resilience to it slowly over the first few months. And they start you off on just looking at still images first. And then you might start looking at videos after a couple of weeks, which is harder basically to deal with because there's sounds involved. And it's just obviously a video is going to be a lot more graphic than a still image.
And one woman who had been groomed as a 13-year-old online was Rhiannon. She'd met somebody claiming to be a woman in her 20s, and their conversation took place just over the course of one day.
I didn't realise at the time, like, how much information I'd actually given out to her. Within a few hours of me talking to her, you know, she knew roughly where I lived. She knew who my friends were at school. I told her what school I went to. You know, she knew that I didn't have the best relationship with my dad and my stepmom at the time. She knew that I was a shy girl with not much confidence.
And the woman Rhiannon thought she was talking to was actually a man in his 50s. And the information he gathered was used to build trust and ultimately violate that trust.
She asked me for a photo, topless, and she spent so long talking me round to it that eventually I just thought, you know, what's the harm in doing this? It's not like this person's here in my room and taking my clothes off in front of them. You know, that online aspect of it, it made it feel like it wasn't real life what was happening. And so I sent a topless photo. And her whole demeanour changed after that. She wanted more images and she wanted me to do more things. And instead of complimenting me and trying to reassure and encourage me into doing things, her demeanour then was that, well, I've got a picture of you topless, so if you don't do what I want you to do now, I'm going to send it to your school. I'm going to make sure that all your friends see it. I'm going to make sure your parents see it. You know, and everyone's going to see what a dirty, horrible girl you've been and what you've been up to. And to me, that was terrifying. You know, as a 13-year-old girl, I don't think there's anything that you would feel would be worse for you than everybody at school seeing something like this and, you know, your parents finding out.
And that man would come to Rhiannon's house and assault her, a crime for which he has since been prosecuted. And Rhiannon now works to prevent similar crimes. And while all acknowledged the many positive aspects of our online lives, Henry talked about just how easy it is for criminals like this to hide in plain sight.
Sometimes in the videos that we watch, you can hear like someone's parents on the other side of the door knocking in, asking them, is everything okay in there? And they shout out, yeah, everything's fine, while they're in the process of doing this. Most of the time, they're just doing it in their bedrooms. You know, they're recording themselves in their bedrooms, they're recording themselves in their bathrooms, in their family home. You're just so frustrated because you're like, please open the door. You can stop this.
That was Age, Sex, Location, the Doc on One this week. Now, we do like the sporting underdog here on Playback, and the Davis vs Goliath didn't come much bigger than Shamrock Rovers versus AC Milan. On Morning Ireland, ahead of the game, Damien O'Mara brought us this.
Rovers have been very realistic in the build-up about the challenge that's in store, but they're also keen to demonstrate their ability. Here's their head coach, Stephen Bradley.
Ah, look, it's a fantastic opportunity for us as a group, staff and players. It's exciting to be looking at a team like AC Milan, and you want to test yourself every week, and this has been no different. Obviously, the level's different, and they're a top team with some world-class players, but how we approach it and how we analyse the game hasn't changed.
Ooh, suitably understated. And that's the view from inside the stadium. But what about the fans outside? Well, Evelyn O'Rourke spoke to Rovers mega fan, Emma.
It's everything. It's family. It's my life. I live and I breathe it. Just every day revolves around Rovers. There's always something in my life every day that I never stop talking about them. It's very hard to explain. It grips you. It takes you in. And as soon as you see a Rovers game for your first time, you're just there.
How frustrating is it for you not to be at the match this evening? You know, that it's taking place behind closed doors.
Like, I live 3 kilometres down the road and I can't be there. It's very difficult to know, to be sitting in my sitting room tonight on my own watching this match and what could be, should we get a result. We may not, but, you know, the lads have put it all out there. They'll leave it all on the pitch for us and that's all we can ask them.
And yes, AC Milan did win. We'll get you next time. Now, we're almost at a finish here on Playback and we're going to return to where we started with a little bit of COVID and another C word. Because for one man, it's forward planning time.
There are 99 days to Christmas. I had several conversations yesterday with totally different people and groups of people about Christmas. And at the back of a lot of people's minds are the fact that as we head towards our first ever Christmas in a pandemic, which sounds kind of crazy, but it's what we're heading towards, is that we are going to have stripped down Christmas. It's going to be, the reality is, we are now going to have difficult decisions, which will be, you're coming, you can't, families are going to have to have those conversations. And my advice is, and whether you like it, and I'm going to say it anyway, have them now. So there's no pain heading towards it. No harm saying, do you know what, let's aim towards a stripped down Christmas this year. Probably nothing wrong with it, ultimately.
I'm sorry, excuse me, pardon. Ryan Sleighbells Tuberty with the stripped down Christmas? What, pray tell, is he talking about?
So what I'm going to suggest is you have a series of boutique gatherings in the weekends before Christmas. Now, that doesn't mean you have to have turkeys. Just get some chickens in. Have a small roast. Get half a box of crackers. Have a few selection boxes, get a tree in early and just invite people around within the restrictions. And then by Christmas Day, you're going to have this really beautiful Christmas, which will be low key.
Turn off those lights.
Intimate.
Just me in a onesie.
Less fussy.
Couple of chicken wings will do.
And
BYOB.
Dare I say it, possibly more enjoyable.
And to think that man hosts the toy show. Well, that's almost it for this week's Playback. Quite the eventful week. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.
You don't like crazy music. You don't like rock and bands. You just want to go to a movie show. Sit there and hold in hands. You're so square. But I don't care. I don't know why my heart flips. I only know it does. I wonder why I love you, baby. I guess it's just because you're so square. But I don't care. I don't know why my heart flips. I only know it does. Wonder why I love you, baby. I guess it's just because you're so square. But I don't care. Just because you're so square, but I don't care.